It's been nearly a year since Charlottesville, Virginia, became another symbol for the growing visibility of white supremacy in the United States. That was after the largest gathering of white nationalists in decades converged upon the city to protest the removal of a statue of Robert E. Lee. Local authorities failed to prevent violent clashes between white nationalists and counter-protesters. Protester Heather Heyer was killed when a man drove his car through a crowded street. Two state troopers died in a helicopter crash, and dozens more were injured. But the president refused to take sides.
I think there's blame on both sides. What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? I've condemned many different groups, but not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me.
A.C. Thompson is a reporter with ProPublica and a correspondent for Frontline, and he covered the rally and has continued to report on its fallout for the last year. His findings are detailed in a new documentary out this week from ProPublica and PBS Frontline, and it's called Documenting Hate, Charlottesville. And he joins me now to discuss it. A.C., thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
So really tough stuff to talk about. When I was watching this, I kept thinking state and local authorities just felt really underprepared for what happened in Charlottesville. But they also appeared to be somewhat disinterested in preventing violence. Can you help me understand what happened?
Yeah, it's a really important issue. So there's a 200-page report that looks into what happened that day. It's called the Hafey Report. It was commissioned by the city of Charlottesville. And basically what it says is, there was a lack of preparation. There was a lack of communication. The state police were there with 600 officers. The local police had about 130 officers, and they couldn't talk to each other on radios. They didn't have each other's operational plans. There were a lot of breakdowns like that. But I think the most important thing to understand is that there was what appears to have been basically a conscious decision on the part of Charlottesville police to allow violence to occur in the streets and let that violence happen and then declare an unlawful assembly and say, hey, we're going to clear everyone out. And that violence absolutely spiraled out of control. And I think we can say clearly a year later, that was a really, really bad decision.
Well, and I also want to think, I mean, I've covered events in after the events of Michael Brown and Ferguson, for example, when you have the potential for largely black and brown protesters coming out, the police seem to have pretty severe measures put in place to handle that. So I was thinking, as I'm watching this, I couldn't imagine if it was a group of black nationalists, for example, the police would have a similar response. In fact, there were some clips in the documentary that people are actually asking police to intervene, and they choose not to.
Right. I think what was remarkable is that we had had almost 2 years of clashes at white supremacist and Klan rallies all across the country. In Anaheim, we had 3 people stabbed. In Sacramento, we had 7 people stabbed. In Berkeley, we had hours and hours of brutal violence out in the streets. This is political violence. And the police were on alert that you could have really bad outcomes in these circumstances. And yet in Charlottesville, they let that pattern of sort of mutual combat persist. And I think you're right. I think when we've seen protests involving Black Lives Matter, when we've seen other protests, we had seen much more aggressive interventionist policing. And that time period from the middle of early 2016 through August 2017, I think you saw this sort of really, really poorly thought out laissez-faire, let them just fight it out policing.
So, when we see how easily it is that Black and Brown Americans lose their lives in this country, I find it almost impossible that the cops, whether it's federal authorities, state authorities, local authorities, just can't seem to get it together to have better protections in place when it's white supremacists and nationalists who are showing up.
What's particularly worrisome about Charlottesville is they had preparation in their own town. They had a white power rally with Richard Spencer a few months earlier. Then they had a Klan rally. And then they had Unite the Right in August 2017. So both nationally, they could look at the picture of what was happening, but also locally, they could see it in their town. And then when you go back to the independent report on what happened, There is testimony in there that the police chief, Al Thomas at the time, he has since retired, said, hey, you know, we're going to let them fight it out. It'll make it easier to clear them out later. We're just going to let them fight it out. He denied that later. But everything that you can see from the evidence that's been collected is that that was basically the policy.
Now, we're talking about last year's Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. I'm with reporter A.C. Thompson here. A.C., I'm wondering, we saw reports about a week ago of a Unite the Right rally or Identity Europa, one of these white supremacists here in New York City in Fort Tryon Park. Did the events in Charlottesville, in your estimation, sort of signal that this type of protest is okay? I mean, have these groups become emboldened as a result of what happened in Charlottesville?
No, I actually think things are different than that. I think what's happened is the movement has gone in three different directions. So what you saw here in New York is you saw Identity Europa doing what they do now, which is sort of flash mob type activism. We're going to drop a banner. We're going to show up somewhere quickly. We're going to put out posters, but we're not going to tell you where we're going to be ahead of time. It's much more a hit and run. You've seen people drop out of the movement. That's another consequence of what happened in Charlottesville. Some people said, it's too much for me. I went out. And a third group of people has said, you know, what I really want to do is kill folks. I mean, honestly, that's what they've said. And they've gone in the terrorist direction. They've said, I'm going to pursue a lone wolf strategy of fighting back against the government. And that's my plan now.
And so are you seeing any way for any of these responses? Like how does the media respond? How should law enforcement respond to these three groups that you're talking about? Because when it's somebody who says, I'm going to be a lone wolf and go off and kill people, I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's terrifying. But at the same time I say it's terrifying, I also think people should be, they should be alert, they should be concerned, but they shouldn't be paranoid and overwhelmed. So when we look at groups like we reported on in our film, a group called Adam Waffen, that's a neo-Nazi group that explicitly says, we want to overthrow the government and start a race war. We want to engage in political terrorism.
And are they growing, AC?
We believe that after Charlottesville, their numbers grew. I think recently they've had some setbacks and are probably a little bit smaller, but yeah, they grew. You look at them and you say, they're important to keep an eye on. They're explicitly aimed at political violence on a large scale, but there are also not that many of them. And so we don't want to be terrified, but we want to be alert.
Now, we're a year after Charlottesville at the end of this week. Where are we today? You've been following these groups since then. Where are we, in a better position or a worse position than we were a year ago?
I think the worrisome thing is that the ideology has seeped further and further into the mainstream. And I think that's the worrying thing. I think the groups are somewhat fractured, somewhat fragmented, and maybe not as active as they were. But I think they've already been successful at a certain level.
And that's something that I think a lot of us, both in the media and beyond, need to be worried about. I mean, this is serious rhetoric that's actually having consequences.
Exactly.
A.C. Thompson is a reporter for ProPublica and Frontline, which is produced by our partners at WGBH. And the Frontline and ProPublica joint investigation called Documenting Hate in Charlottesville premieres Tuesday night on PBS stations and on their website. A.C., thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.